Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, earlier this week, Rob Pelinka took responsibility for the shoddy roster construction that we all suffered through this year with the Lakers. But did he do it because he believes it or because he had no choice? That's the question we ask Bill Oram of The Athletic on today's show next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Little known fact, the guy who's responsible for that little sax riff at the end of the new intro is none other than The Athletic's Bill Oram. That's what having a mustache like that will do for you. Instantly learn how to be a great sax player.
I'd do it on trumpet for you, but not sax. I was never good with the woodwinds.
Before we continue, though, Bill, do want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, and remind people that no matter how you get your podcasts or where you get your podcasts, we will never put this thing behind a paywall, and we are always available to you. So thank you very much for that. Again, subscribe to Locked On Lakers on YouTube. You get podcasts like this a little early. Bill Oram from The Athletic followed this train wreck of a team all over the country all year long. What was it? Just how are you doing? Like, are you happy to be done with it? Why are you disappointed there's no playoffs? I mean, what are you feeling? What are your emotions, Bill Oram?
Another 50 games, Bill, do you think they could have caught a rhythm and maybe right. made some noise in the playoffs?
When's that 10 game winning streak Anthony Davis promised us coming?
So I'm glad it's over in the sense that we can stop like having to pretend like it wasn't going to end this way, right? Like there was a very long stretch of, hey, when we get healthy, we can catch, like you said, catch fire at the right time. We can peak at the right time, be the best team at the end of the season. And because you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and we've seen that work before, you didn't ever feel like you could fully close the door on that. But it was pretty clear pretty early on there was an outside chance of that at best. And so as we're watching this team lose, 30-point deficits night in, night out, and they're still not eliminated, they're still in ninth, they're still in play-in positioning, you're kind of like, you had to sort of allow for the possibility of this, turning around at some point. So I'm glad we're at a place now where we can discuss this more honestly about what last week, but what this season actually was and what the pitfalls were. For me personally and emotionally, early on, I identified the possibility of a play-in game in New Orleans, my favorite city in America, and my favorite post-game drinking bar in America. So I was pretty committed to the Lakers finishing 10th and us getting one more trip to New Orleans. So I'm personally angry at the Lakers.
You almost threaded that needle, I have to say. They almost did that for you.
Damn Spurs. I'm also mad at the Lakers because in anticipation of the Lakers being in the play-in this week, I flew in my mom from out of state to watch my kids this week because the schedule will be so unpredictable here, just like hanging out with my mom and playing cribbage. I'm not mad that I'm getting this time with my mom. I'm just mad I invested in a plane ticket.
Glad you clarified. Is she like an otherwise unpleasant woman that you don't like to be around?
No, she's wonderful. I mean, I'm a little angry at her also because she just beat me at cribbage before we jumped on the podcast. But that's what you do in the offseason. You drink tea. I've got my tea too, Andy, and you play cribbage with your parents.
Okay, but before we get to Pelinka, because we want to address a piece you wrote, really a good piece about Rob Pelinka in his exit interview and the idea that he is basically out of meat shields to hide behind at this point. There's nobody left to deflect the blame game towards. You were talking about the Kabuki theater that was this season in terms of just maintaining that idea that this team could catch fire somehow if LeBron, AD, and Russ could get enough games together, despite the fact that there was no evidence of them really looking at that level with all three of them together, but also
there was no evidence for people. I think they were 11 and 10, correct?
Right.
When all three of them played.
But there was also no evidence that you could ever count on the three of them being on the court together anyway. But being around the team in person more than Brian and I were, what sense did you get of their belief in this, as opposed to it just being a company line that you're going to say?
I think LeBron specifically was, like, I think Anthony Davis might have believed. Anthony Davis was, you know,
he wasn't around to see a lot of this, Bill.
Well, but also it was a lot of it was his absence that, you know, I think he felt a lot of the weight of his absence. So I think he felt like if he could be healthy, then maybe that would be the difference. But you know, like LeBron, I feel like LeBron was out on this team after they lost to the Bucks. Like that game, you know, back in, I want to say February, early March, maybe, when they lost the, it was February, when they lost to the Bucks, and LeBron basically said, we can't get on their level. And then right after the All-Star break, when they lost to the Clippers, and you're like, hey, LeBron, what's this, you know, tell you about this team? It's like, they're better than us. I mean, they're better than us being the team that's right ahead of you in the standings, a potential team you're going to face in the play-in. Like that to me was just like, you know, he had a pretty healthy dose of like, reality about how good this team was or how not good this team was pretty early on. Like, I mean, in the context of a playoff race pretty early on.
And it's interesting to me. Like there are a lot of great stories, you know, you guys have written about it. You know, Sam had a great story about LeBron this year. They've done some reporting at the Times and ESPN about kind of postmortems of this team. And it seems like at the very least there was inklings that this was going to be that the plan wasn't going to work as intended as early as training camp.
Yeah.
You know, when Russ, like the fit issues and the temperament issues just seemed to be a problem. Was that clear to you? Like, like LeBron, as we like to put up the story, I've made a terrible mistake. I've made a huge mistake. In terms of just the belief that this Russ thing works. I've kind of maintained they were incredibly naive about how you would get Russ to fit and how it would work.
I think there was a real disconnect between the front office and the coaching staff in terms of what the potential for a Russell Westbrook, LeBron AD trio looked like. I think there was a real arrogance on the part of the front office. And I would say by extension, LeBron James and Anthony Davis that they could mold Russ into the player they needed him to be, an arrogance that those three players were enough and kind of regardless of what the other pieces around them were. Whereas the coaching staff from conversations I had, you know, really early on were like, we don't know what this is going to look like or how this is going to fit. And so, you know, it was interesting. If you listen to Russ at the exit interviews, he really was like, I don't know what I did to this dude. I don't know what he had against me. You know, he made it really personal with Frank
Vogel.
Him
being Frank Vogel.
Right. And to me, it's, you know, I don't think there was ever anything personal there. In fact, I think on a personal level, I thought Frank really defended Russ more than any coach should have been expected to. But, you know, I think that, you know, there were coaches, you know, who were really concerned about what this was going to look like from a basketball standpoint really early on. And you didn't have to be, you know, you didn't have to be, you know, Tex Winter to understand the, you know, some of the schematic issues. And, you know, Russ didn't seem to get that. And it just like never, ever, ever looked right. And if you go back to the story I wrote a week or two ago, I had an exclusive interview with Frank Vogel where he said, I remember how I asked him this question. I said, when did you first pick up on this was not going to be, you know, as smooth sailing as you thought? What was the first domino of all the things that went wrong? And he went back to the preseason and he said, when Russ and AD played, before LeBron ever played, it didn't look good. And it's like, that's before they lost a single game in the regular season. Very telling, very damning, and I think reflects poorly. I mean, just really poorly on the people, on the decision makers.
Let's talk about them then, Bill. Great seg. I love how you set that up. Because the decision makers are the ones that that are I think getting a lot of the focus here as the Lakers try to figure out how to put this together. And you have a story up at The Athletic that breaks down Rob Pelinka's culpability and how much he's taking responsibility, but also looks at some of the, there are a couple little nuggets in there that I want to make sure we talk about that get to what the problem is. And I'd love to get some of your diagnosis about it. And we will do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting, stats, and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and more, including this year's NBA playoffs and the start of MLB. The MLB previews for the AL and NL are up right now. Like everybody, BetOnline pretty high on the Dodgers, but also think just in general, the NL West is going to be really strong. The Padres could be good. The Giants could be good. The Angels, despite their star power, two of the best players. No, nobody's thinking anything about them. It's just kind of what the Angels do. But BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. So head to the website today or use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Tell you what, Andy, if you want to make a safe bet on something, you can bet that the information you're going to receive from The Athletic's Bill Oram is always going to be on point, and that's why he's on our show today.
You know what it does, Brian? It covers.
That's right. Bill, by the way, had to sneak this in because, as everybody, anybody, this is a little insider, he knows that once beat guys like Bill are done with their season, they're sort of obligated by their families to take like a few weeks off because families hate what people like Bill do for a living. And so he is
sneaking
this in. He is like, he's got to be really careful his wife doesn't come home and catch him doing this. He's like having an affair with us or watching online pornography.
Much worse.
Don't make me make the joke I made offline if you go down this road.
No, please don't. So, you have some interesting stuff in your most recent story up at The Athletic about Rob Pelinka and him taking responsibility for what's going on. But I wanted to kind of set this up by trying to frame what they're taking responsibility for, because it's not just the roster, which has gone from championship caliber to this in two extra seasons. There's a lot of institutional instability here. You make a point. They've gone through, what is it, three head athletic trainers, three strength coaches. A lot of the support staff behind the scenes has turned over a lot over the last few seasons. What is going on? Why are they churning through so many people?
Well, I mean, so one thing you need to know about Rob Pelinka is Rob Pelinka, and I wrote this during the last coaching search, and so it's interesting because we didn't talk a lot about the dysfunction or instability when they were winning, but it was still there. Mm-hmm. But Rob Pelinka, you know, from a decision-making standpoint, likes consensus. And I think that there is a sense that, you know, he understands that consensus is protection. It's cover. And so, you know, if you make group decisions, then it's, you know, not just, you know, on, you know, one person if it doesn't work out. And so, you know, you look at some of the struggles along the way, you know, the coaching search, I mean, it was a big 3 years ago group effort. And, you know, but then you lose Ty Lue, you lose Monty Williams, like who's that on? Like that's really on Rob Pelinka, as is hiring the guy who wins you a championship. Rob Pelinka also gets credit for hiring Frank Vogel when I don't think there's another team in the league that with their coaching opening, you know, would have at least started their search with Frank Vogel. So it was a good hire. It was a really good hire. But I think that sort of like collaboration or sort of that sense of like group effort does lead to more churn because it's like, well, who's responsible for this? Well, we've had injury issues. So let's, you know, start with the medical department and the training staff. So, you know, when Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson took over, Marco Nunez was the trainer. He only lasted a couple of years. He'd been there forever, dating back to the championship.
Oh, yeah.
As the assistant,
then yeah, Nina Shea,
who'd been the South Bay trainer, got it for a couple of years. Then she was her contract was not renewed last year. Again, after a season with a lot of significant injuries, then this season they hired Robert Sancho from the Warriors. You know, a lot of injuries. What's going to happen? I mean, you can't pin it on the medical staff again, right? The training staff again. But you know, during Rob Pelinka's exit interview, you did hear him say like he went through and like Rob Pelinka was more accountable than I've ever heard him before. He said, "It is on me. I am the ultimate decision maker." And I was struck by that because we haven't heard that from him as much. Last year, he said, "We built a championship roster and we didn't win because of forces outside our control." Okay, well, he couldn't say that this year because nobody would have believed him. But he did say, it's on the front office, it's on the coaching staff, it's on the training staff, it's on the players. So he did kind of go through that laundry list of like highlighting everybody, which kind of felt like right out of the Rob Pelinka playbook. So there was still some of that, you know, even when he said, you know, the decision to fire Frank Vogel was a collaboration.
But he mentions Tim Harris by name. He mentions
Tim Harris. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, well, are you the ultimate decision maker or are you not? Because why are you bringing these other folks in? But I do think that like there is an understanding that you can't just, you know, hide behind all these other people anymore. You know, he got a promotion after the championship. He has a contract that is going to become much more of a factor going forward. 2 years left on his own contract. It's kind of put up or shut up time.
I mean, there's also two. I mean, really quick, I know Brian has a question I wanted to ask, but just, I mean, in some respects, even that collaboration that you're mentioning there is a bit of a dodge because, of course, you know, this is a decision that Jeannie Buss is involved with because you're not going to fire your coach, then let Jeannie know about it a few days later.
Like, no, the only person who makes significant decisions like that is Magic Johnson.
Yeah, or let Jeannie read about it on Twitter and then inform her post facto.
You know what I mean? Like, and that. Okay, I want to ask about this before. This wasn't exactly when I planned to ask you about it, but I think it gets to the idea of collaborations and who's actually making these decisions, who ultimately should be held accountable for them. The leaks that have been coming out of late that, you know, the basketball minds in the front office weren't necessarily that into Russell Westbrook, but LeBron and AD, especially LeBron, created so much pressure. They had no choice, can't tell him no. Like, A, I don't really believe that to begin with at all, because Russell Westbrook is very much the type of star bleeper move that they've always wanted to make. Like, I could believe that Rob Pelinka maybe liked Buddy Hield more, but that's not necessarily the same thing as disliking Russ. There's a difference. But for the sake of argument, let's just say that Rob Pelinka was told this by LeBron and AD and was like in his head, the F are you guys talking about? Like, that's a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. Presumably, he is going to go to Jeannie and run this by Jeannie because he cannot unilaterally make this type of move without going to her first. Like, this is for a bunch of different reasons, including salary. This is something he has to go to her for. If he, presumably, she's going to say, what do you think? He's going to say, I think it's terrible. At that point, there is an obligation by Jeannie to say, okay, tell them no, and if there's any issues, I will handle it. Like, because I'm your boss. I don't think they realize that the narrative that we refused to not do a knowingly bad decision because we were afraid of LeBron and AD, that's actually worse. And I think the effort to create, you know, a shield for themselves, they're actually dodging accountability by putting that out there.
I mean, you're right. I mean, there's just no good way to spin the Russell Westbrook trade. It was either, you know, it was either a bad decision and you knew it, or it was a bad decision and you didn't know it. And both of those speak really poorly about your systems, right? The systems you have in place to make decisions and the process, which, by the way, has not been really validated in the Rob Pelinka tenure, except for the offseason of 2019, when you had a barrel full of assets that you were able to use to make the Anthony Davis trade. You were operating from not from a position of strength, but at least from a position of assets. And you also had a couple of, I mean, I guess lucky breaks, right? Like, you thought DeMarcus Cousins was going to be your backup center that year.
Dwight Howard doesn't get signed unless DeMarcus Cousins doesn't get signed.
And you know, listen, again, credit for like recovering from losing your backup center and signing Dwight Howard, who was out of the league. So that counts too. But like, you know, that's 1 year out of now going into four.
Danny Green, the only reason they could even get Danny Green is Danny Green was the only player in the league also waiting on Kawhi.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's good that they were proactively thinking about him, all that, but that was a very specific situation. If Kawhi or Danny Green had not been teammates in Toronto, there's no way they get him. Like, it doesn't happen.
What's interesting is, like, I just go back to, like, Rob kept saying, or he said this a couple times on Monday, you know, we've been in this position before and we will figure it out like we did in 2019. And it's just a much tougher job than it was.
It's not even close. It's not even close to the same context. And I, you know, that, and that's, you know, we'll break out of this, you know, but I think that is what is so both interesting and frightening about the decision that they have to make around Russell Westbrook, because we talked about this for Thursday's show. Like, the I've seen people kind of mock the preciousness of holding on to the 27 and the 29 draft picks. Oh, like, you care about an eighth grader and a sixth grader. Like, we're not going to see these guys forever. You know, you're worried about the draft. And that's not the point. The point is, you can only trade those picks one time, and they're probably going to have to move them to get better. So it's not about waiting until 2029 to make sure you can make a good pick, although they might need it. It's the, are you going to use those picks to unwind a mistake, or are you going to use them to get better? And, you know, you might have to eat it.
And how much better can you get?
Right. But you might have to eat it with Westbrook for a year, and or eat it as an organization for a year, so that you don't turn a 2-year mistake into a 6-year mistake. And that, I think, is the, where do you think they are in that calculus? Don't answer. Think about it, because we have important messages for the people.
Okay, go ahead. I didn't know.
That is your cue, Andy. Go
okay.
ahead.
Okay. Hey, one of those important messages that Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Built Bar. And eating smart and eating enjoyably, it's never tasted better. You can treat yourself now, but without feeling guilty. If you've not tried Built Bar's Puffs, you are missing out on one of their best tasting item. Built, sit. I'm glad you're sitting, because this is going to blow your mind. Puffs, the first ever protein-infused marshmallow. Can you believe that? Like, science has come up with protein-infused marshmallows. They're fluffy like a marshmallow. They're marshmallowy like a marshmallow, and covered in 100% real chocolate. You got great flavors like cinnamony churro, coconut marshmallow, banana cream pie. They're all going to feel like your favorites. And unlike a candy bar, which on average 200 to 300 calories of just empty gunk, 130 calories.
What?
gunk. Most Built Bars, they're just 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, only 4 net carbs, but 17 grams of protein, and that's what you want. So go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, get 15% off your order. Again, promo code LOCKED15, 15% off at Built.com.
Locked On Lakers also brought to you by Rock Auto. Bill, with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's probably impossible for your local auto parts store to stock all the parts you need for the Orem Mobile. So why endure pointless or intimidating questions? You know, what, you got an EX, you got an LX, you got an S5, you got an S8. Then you got to wait behind the counter while the guy looks at their computer and figures out if you know what they can sell you. And that's something that might be getting dust in their back, you know, storage area. They just want to get rid of it, and you're not getting the part you need. Bill, you have a computer. It's called your phone, and you have access to rockauto.com.
Or it's not called your computer.
Or your computer, right? You also have a computer, which you call your computer. And you can find that at home or in your pocket.
I wondered why you say that.
Because it's in the copy. Okay. More or less.
Scotch.
You know, it's in the copy. So you save time, you save money when you use Rock Auto. And why choose to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or dealership? Bill, for example, let's say you have a Honda Odyssey. I do. I recommend them. A fuel pump. You get one of those things, $353 at a chain store. You know what costs a Rock Auto, Bill? $216, which is not bad comparatively. Certainly better than $353. Rock Auto, it's a family-owned business serving do-it-yourselfers like Bill for over 20 years. So you go, you explore their easy-to-use website, you find the solution for your auto part needs, go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, right locked on in the How Did You Hear About Us box. So they know we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts for car or your car will ever need, rockauto.com. All right. So, Bill, you may remember before those very compelling sales pitches that I had asked you a question about the team's viewpoint on how they look at the draft picks, how they look at unwinding the Westbrook deal and all that stuff. What do you think the attitude is? Is it one of sort of desperation, like we have to somehow put a championship caliber team back together again, do it? Or is there more of a long-term view of the situation that they're in? Because you said, like, Rob made the comparison to 2019. This is nothing like 2019. It's not even close.
So I think there is a longer view. I think frankly, the fact that they didn't use the pick to make the John Wall trade at the deadline indicates that they're at least thinking about the value of those picks. Mm-hmm. I think they also were mindful that, you know, they could have used the 27 pick to get John Wall and then would have needed to use the 29 pick to get rid of John Wall this summer. I think, like, the good business side of this would probably be to find a way to get through next season with Russ, either sent home or on your team. The problem is, you have LeBron James, who's going to turn 38 years old. And if you have any sort of window to win championships left, you've got to make the most of it. And I don't think that anyone could sensibly argue that that is with Russell Westbrook playing alongside of him. And it's even less sensible to have Russell Westbrook chewing up $47 million of cap space, you know, on a boat in Newport. So there aren't good options here. And so the Lakers have talked about 2023 cap space being sort of this thing they've preserved, and it's been really important to them. I think they're going to have to just punt on that. They're going to have to accept that 23 cap space is not going to be the way for them to go forward, unless they're not planning on keeping LeBron, unless they decide that LeBron James isn't going to be on this team. But, you know, either you extend him, either you don't, but you're going to have to take on money. And there's a couple trades out there that I think you would pull the trigger on, whether it's the Charlotte deal, the Indiana deal, probably some other versions of those as well. You've got to take on that money to give yourself the best chance of LeBron. Hopefully you aren't having to exhaust all your draft capital, because you are that is a win-win, right? If you're Charlotte, you are getting out of long-term money.
People don't know that it's built around Gordon Hayward, who has a year longer than Russ on his contract and his similar health issues as everybody else. So fit right in with the Lakers in that regard. Then somebody like Kelly Oubre or Terry Rozier, depending, there are other things. In Indiana would be around Malcolm Brogdon, perhaps, and Buddy Hield.
By the way, I just feel like Buddy Hield's going to end up being a Laker. It's destiny.
It's destiny.
It's just a very Rob Pelinka thing also to if you get it wrong on a guy and you hear all year long that you got it wrong, go back to a year ago. It was how did they let Dwight Howard go? How did they mess up the Dwight Howard thing? And all of a sudden he's a free agent. Here he is, comes right back. So it does feel if Rob has the opportunity to in his mind, get a do-over on Buddy Hield, I would be shocked if he didn't find a way to do it. So I think Buddy Hield could very easily be a Laker again. One way or another, not again, but almost Laker previously.
So what you're saying, Bill, is that all of us should have been saying, how did Rob let JaVale McGee get away? We should have been creating that noise more.
Yeah, we just didn't shame Rob enough for the truly egregious ones.
Because that really was the backup big that they really needed to bring back.
Right. Letting him walk so you could give Marcus Gasol the second year.
Well, no, they traded him.
Yeah, or trading him so you could get Marcus Gasol for the second year. Mm-hmm. And then it's Marcus Gasol doesn't even make it through 1 year in the rotation.
For people who missed it, these are the little details that Eric Pincus really laid out well in his story. And Sam Amick wrote about this this week on The Athletic in terms of the disappointment that LeBron's team sort of looks at those details. And these are detail oriented people. Missed a big one with what it'd be like to play with Russ, but beyond that, let's set that aside. Do you have an impression of what they feel like, their impression is of the front office and the decision makers and whatever the basketball operations department is, as opaque as that kind of is right now?
Well, I think that I would just point you to what Sam wrote and the reporting that Sam had, which really outlined, and I thought this flew under the radar, by the way. Everybody really jumped on the fact that LeBron would like Mark Jackson to be the head coach, or that, that's somebody he would endorse. I thought the most telling thing was that, LeBron, would like to see a more robust front office, a better organizational structure. That's not necessarily that he doesn't trust Rob, but he does kind of look around and say, how do things get done here? And, I've said this before, the Lakers always talk about, and this is a great example of Rob also, talking about collaboration. You've got a pretty small front office group, especially when you're talking about free agency and big trades. The Lakers don't have a director of pro personnel. They don't have a pro scouting department. That is Rob and Kurt, basically, who's making those decisions. So it's interesting to then think, okay, well, who's, when you get the nucleus together, it's Rob, Kurt, we now know Linda's involved, might be Rich Paul.
Do you know, Bill, really quick, or have a sense, the degree to which Linda Rammus is involved with basketball decisions as opposed to being, say, somebody that, obviously is heavily involved in the organization, but is more of counsel to Jeannie?
So, without knowing enough details to give you the full answer that I'd love to be able to give you, my understanding is she's involved. Okay. Whether that's making phone calls, whether that's being part of those conversations about, you know, whether it's Rob bouncing ideas off of, you know, she and Kurt together, like she's active in those discussions. And so, you know, what the Lakers might view as a collaborative process, other people outside the organization, and now it kind of sounds like from LeBron's camp as well, view that as lacking structure. And I thought it was telling that, like, you know, I mean, Sam's, you know, reporting kind of led to kind of this, you know, we say it all the time, but like this, you know, characterization of the Lakers as a mom and pop shop. And if that's, again, if that's the way LeBron's people view the Lakers, it's not a compliment, right? The Lakers would say it's a family. It's a family business. It's a, you know, the Lakers family, mom and pop is not a compliment. So, you know, it is going to be interesting to see how that goes, because I don't see the Lakers changing their management structure anytime soon. But I do think that the way they are organized does mean
you can be collaborative. There's nothing wrong with being collaborative as an organization. It's smart to be collaborative.
Yes.
Who are you collaborating with?
It's an echo chamber. Very small siloed echo chamber that to me leads to haphazard decisions.
And with everybody has weird conflicts of interest where my impression has always been too, that like part of Linda Rambis's modus operandi, so to speak, is empowering Kurt Rambis and, you know, making sure Kurt has a job, making sure Kurt is elevated, that his voice is important and all. So is she first and foremost loyal to the best choices for the organization, or is she first and foremost loyal to her husband? You know, these are people who are dear friends of Jeannie Buss. Rob Pelinka is a dear friend of Jeannie Buss, and is sort of the avatar for Kobe Bryant in this organization. And so how do you fire Kobe Bryant? You know, and all this, like, so who exactly is it that you are collaborating with? And who has accountability and independence that goes outside of these personal relationships that she's comfortable with? And that is bothersome to me, because do a lot of work on the side of that looks at organizational structures and management. This was terrible what they have here.
Well, and that actually ultimately leads, Bill, to the last question I know I want to ask you, because it gets into, in certain ways, the nut of the piece that you wrote, which is, Rob Pelinka is out of people that he can, I think, feasibly blame things on.
Meat shields.
That he can really blame things on. He could try to spin decisions, but there's nobody other than Jeannie who's higher up on this food chain than him. Do you think that if there's another season like this one, or at least one where they're not making much closer progress back to that championship status, that A, Jeannie could fire Rob, and B, does firing Rob have a trickle-down effect, do you think, where she would really be willing to reorganize, restructure, bring in a lot of different people to this front office, do things totally different, because, you know, people that she's not familiar with has not been Jeannie's jam. It's not what she does.
Yeah. I think it's a great point, because I was talking about this with somebody the other day. If Rob were to get fired, right? If that actually did happen, would Kurt just become the president of basketball operations at that point? Like, doesn't that seem pretty plausible? I mean, when Jeannie fired her brother, she went to the next person who was the most like a brother to her in Magic Johnson. And so, you know, Kurt has taken some arrows.
It's interesting how her other brother working there, other brothers don't seem to be.
Well, her actual brothers were not like brothers. You know, at least two of them.
To your question of whether or not she would fire Rob, I do get the sense, and this is, you know, I don't want this to get aggregated as she will fire Rob, but like, I get the sense that there is at least more of like a business-like view of that dynamic now, as opposed to just he is an extension of Kobe and therefore, you know, he has the ultimate faith. I asked someone, you know, broadly in those circles last week, if she would actually fire Rob. And the response was, with another disastrous season like this one, she would have no choice. And so I would suspect that she knows that if the Lakers were to finish five, if the Lakers were to build a roster around LeBron James, and any roster built around LeBron James is to be a championship team. If you're barring, you know, catastrophic injuries or something like that, if they are a sub 500 team again next year, and that's another whack at the pinata for Rob Pelinka, I would think that a change would be coming.
This is fascinating because, you know, the seven of the nine seasons, last seven of the last nine seasons, they've had losing records. They've made the playoffs twice. Once they were bounced in the first round. The other one, they admittedly won a title, but also admittedly in the strangest sports year that we will ever see.
Yes.
One hopes.
God, you're right. I mean, I should never say
that. The other common thread with those nine seasons is, right?
Us?
What is that?
I was going to say Genie, you know, because it's important. Because I think there are people who, for whatever reason, don't really seem open to acknowledging this, that Genie ultimately oversees all of this. Mm-hmm. So there is that commonality of Genie. But it's Bill's arrival. It's Bill's arrival to covering this team. Ever since Bill arrived from Utah and began covering the Lakers, quite frankly, it's been a bleep show. Other than that one championship.
Coverage has been fantastic, though.
Coverage has been really good
for that. Yeah.
I mean, listen, they only won a championship when I was stuck at my house 3,000 miles away. So that's
it really may be a matter of just keeping you away from this team.
Like, COVID was created in a lab. COVID was created in a lab to keep Bill Oram away from the Lakers.
Listen, I've said, put me on the payroll, and there is a price for me to go away forever.
There's a price for all of us to go away.
Oh my God. It's not even as high as I think they think it is. Yeah. Well, Bill, I hope your marriage survives this half hour plus of basketball commentary. Please now go enjoy your vacation. We will not speak to you again until we invite you on our Locked On Cribbage podcast. But we also might just invite your mom. I'm not sure. She seems like the superior cribbage player.
Can we get back to like the late night version of your guys' show too? I enjoy that.
Can you find us a sponsor? If the answer to that is yes.
And a booker and all that stuff.
If the answer is we're doing it for free, then no. If the answer is somebody can pay us, absolutely. Love doing that show.
Can I talk about your past shows on your current show? Because sure. I just will say, like, what I loved about the late night happy hour when it existed, and even when I wasn't a guest, although those were my favorite episodes, was like, I'd be like, you guys would do it at like 9 or 10 o'clock, right?
And 10 o'clock.
My wife would go to bed, like I'd either still be up or I'd be in bed like scrolling, and I'd be scrolling like it was just there. It was just there for me. It was like a warm blanket. I loved the late night happy hour.
I feel like they actually put that on our business cards. Kamenetsky Brothers, just there.
I feel, Bill, like our shows have been your side piece. they've been the forbidden fruit of your marriage. This is the closest you've come to like stepping outside the line.
No wonder your wife hates us.
The only other thing that would come close is the time that I had an affair with the television show The Affair.
It's very meta.
All right, Bill Oram, The Athletic. His coverage, as always, has been fantastic, even if it is the reason for the Lakers' demise.
By the way, just don't be that hard on him. He's just doing his job. Okay, if you didn't like this interview, give him a break. He's just doing his job. He's a good guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Horses run this game.
Oh, we didn't even get into that. We'll do that next time. All right. We'll see everybody on Monday.